Chair calls the meeting to order. We have a quorum present.
There are no minutes to approve today. Today we do have a hard stop at 10 a.m., so I will remind members and testifiers to please be succinct so we can move through the agenda, please. We have a timer. When you hear it goes off, that means it's time to wrap up. First bill on the agenda is House File 3626. Representative Bang, if you'd come forward, please. And the chair will move the bill, the HF 3626, to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. There is an author's amendment. The chair will move the A24 amendment to put the bill in the form the author intends to discuss it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, the bill is in order, if you would proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. This bill is a continuation of the work to address our workforce shortage of our mental health providers that also disproportionately affects our BIPOC communities. The proposed changes to the social work provisional license statute creates an alternative licensure pathway without the national exam for social workers, which is often a bottleneck to get more providers through the door. The proposed changes removes the following eligibility criteria for provisional licensure: foreign-born, communicates in English as a second language, has taken applicable license or examination and did not pass, in addition to reunification of the Minnesota Chapter 148D to Minnesota Chapter 148E. It's mostly technical changes to update the disciplinary language for provisional license, updates supervisor eligibility, and expands the methods of individual and group supervision to align with current social work statutory language in 148E. What is not changing is the provisional license maintains 2,000 hours of supervised practice and 37.5 supervision hours with a board-approved supervisor. The provisional license is effective for up to 3 years for the licensee to complete the supervised practice and supervision hours. The provisional legislative proposal addresses the licensure exam pass rates disparities among social workers and from ethnic and racial communities. It also provides opportunity for individuals with a social work education who is struggling to pass a national exam to work towards licensure with supervised practice. Mr. Chair, that was the general overview and some of the technical review of what is in the bill, and I'm happy to open it up for our testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Vang. We do have some testifiers. We'll have first one will be Desiree Galloway, and if Tsua Dao Zhang will also come forward and be ready to be number two, and then Chi Lor, please. Ms. Galloway, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
So my name is Desiree Galloway, and I am a licensed graduate social worker. I have done this work for the last...
Can you speak a little closer to the mic? Thank you.
I am Desiree Galloway. I'm a licensed graduate social worker, and I've been in the field for over 40 years. I am here to testify as it relates to the provisional license and the licensure exam concerns. The provisional licensure will allow, it's just an alternative pathways for qualified individuals that want to enter to the workforce in the field of social work. However, based on the data that has come forward, it has demonstrated that it is racially biased. There's also additional concerns for those who have lived with disabilities. It's a tedious process for them to even get accommodations to pass the test, to even take the test. And then you have the issue with those who just are scared to come into the field now because of this issue of failure rate of the test of the exam. So I'm here to testify, and I thank Representative Bang and Hansen for their work, the great work they have given into this. I do sit on the Minnesota Board of Social Works Coalition Committee, And I belong to the Minnesota Association of Black Social Workers, who is a member of that coalition. And we have put a lot of energy and time into what is going to be best for the field of social work. And that includes removing the extra licensure hours. It's very costly to continue to increase the licensure hours because it's costly. It costs $40 to $150 per hour. So you multiply that towards the $2,000 hours. That's a lot of money. Not to mention, if you fail the test, the exam, you have to pay for that exam each time. And that becomes another barrier. So if we're talking about reducing barriers, this is lived experience. I live in the community, and I'm listening to what people have got to say about the field of social worker. That's a problem. So I am here to testify that I do support the amendment. And I, again, hope that you will listen to us as a person of color that is coming forward and asking for the provisional license to be granted.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Galloway. Appreciate it. Next up, Chua Dao Zhang. And if you could please make yourself comfortable, introduce yourself to the committee, we'd appreciate it.
Hi, and good morning. My name is Chua Dao Zhang. I am of Hmong descent and a licensed graduate social worker practicing in a community-based mental health clinic and as an outpatient therapist. I finished my 2 years of graduate school work education at Augsburg University back in 2020, and I attempted to pass the LGSW exam for the first 2 years with a total of 3 tests. I was near the threshold of passing the exam on the first 2 attempts. However, on the 3rd attempt, I was able to pass the exam. As I look back at this experience, I have paid a total of $1,284.81 in fees for the Minnesota Board of Social Work, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for background check, and the ASWB test itself. I doubted my abilities and capacities as a social worker of color because this exam made me feel like I was an incompetent social worker. I doubted my skills and abilities, and I went to a dark place about changing my profession. I was depressed for a while, and as a social worker who lives with a disability, I felt helpless and hopeless. And today, I know myself worth as a social worker because I became licensed just a few years ago. I wanted to also mention about a study group that was formed by social workers of color that I was a part of. Our group, we spent countless hours every week to study materials and books and test questions and about $300 per individual. We exhausted our resources, which led us to take hypnotherapy as a way of lessening our test anxiety. And that was really burdensome. I firmly hold on to the NASW Code of Ethics, service, and social justice values as a social worker. These represent the best of us as a social work profession. As I look forward to the end of Minnesota State Legislative Session, it is my hope and wish that this amendment to this bill passes. The thought of paying $210 next month for my 24th month annual license renewal is even more significant to me and the future of this profession. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Zhang. Next up, Chi Lor. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself when you're ready.
Good morning. My name is Chi Lor. I am a school-based mental health therapist. I serve Hmong women, children, and family from my community. I am here today to support the bill as amended, and I want to share a little bit about my story. I graduated from my master's program for social work in 2017, and I did not become permanently licensed until 2021. And so prior to the provisional licensure pathway, I took the exam 3 times, and each time I failed by a 1-point margin with no to little feedback about how to increase or do better. I'd given up hopes for ever being a licensed social worker, as the experience of retaking this exam was really financially, physically, emotionally and mentally taking a psychological toll on me. It caused a lot of distress and created a lot of limiting beliefs about the person I am and truly dash my dreams. So I found out by chance about the provisional licensure, and luckily I met the criteria to be legible. However, this isn't the case for many others, as this pathway is really only available to a narrow group of people. In the work that I do, there is a growing demand for people like me, and licensure continues to be the biggest barrier. So we do need more people in the workforce. From my experience, I believe that the provisional licensure is a viable pathway to licensure, and without it, there is absolutely no way for folks like myself to pass, as the exam is designed blindly and with many biases, as stated earlier, and the data showing so. So really, it is my hope that you pass the bill and expand the provisional licensure eligibility so that others like myself have a pathway for permanent licensure in addition to the examination. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and taking the time today, Ms. Lohr. Appreciate it. Anybody else from the public wish to address the committee? Seeing none, we will go to member questions and discussions. Member questions, we have Representative Backer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Let's use the mic here. There we go. I'm looking at line 6.6. If you could there, Representative, can you help clarify why in 6.6 that to ensure continued competency was striked out for license holder? What was the reasoning behind that on line 6.6, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Backer. Representative Vang?
Mr. Chair, I also have the board here with me, too, and I think they will be best be able to answer this question.
Please. Thank you. May come forward. Please introduce your name for the committee and proceed.
Sure. My name is Joy Yang, and I'm the executive director for the Board of Social Work. That is struck out because it already has in line 5.27 that the supervisee has to practice ethically and competently according to social work knowledge and skills. And so it's already stated in other parts of in the above lines in that section.
Thank you. Representative Backer, follow up.
Thank you. Could you point out where it would be stated? Because that's a concern of mine, and to make sure that sure. A person has. You don't want me to be doing it, okay?
So if you look at section that starts with evaluation in line 5.17, because it says it has to be validated through the supervisor, right? And so if you go down to line 5.27.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. No further questions,
right,
Representative
no, thank
Backer?
You.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a kind of a continuing question for Representative Backer's position on that continuing, but also that it has the ability to, takes away the ability to revoke the license for provisional license too. And I just, so I'm asking why that was put in as a first question. I have a little follow-up.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Could you restate your name again, please?
Sure. It's Joy Yang with
Joy
Board
Yang.
Of Social Work. Yeah.
Joy Yang. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yang. If you would respond.
Sure. Part of the recodification that we did was to align the social work disciplinary actions with 148E is where all of our standards of practice is located. And so removing that and updating it so it aligns with all the disciplinary action that will be allowable for provisional license. So it's it actually expands so that the due process is the same for a provisional licensee or somebody who has a license via exam.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Troying.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Yes, please.
I've had a couple examples of, where we've actually used, there's been, I would say there are, borderline abuses where social workers have actually used a person's religion or their church to actually, weigh in to what their remedy was for a problem. And there's two states that have also had situations, Montana and Indiana, where kids were actually taken away from their parents, and it had something to do with their political background, what they felt politically. And so by loosening this up, I think we actually have a little more risk for it to be, in some cases, politically driven. So either politically or your church affiliation was weighed in, and I just don't want to see that happen. So that's where I think the ability to still revoke and to look at the licensure is still really important. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Any other questions? Let's see. We have Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Chair Bierman, and thanks for bringing this bill. I think it's important. We do need to work on making sure that we provide alternative ways for people to get licensed, especially in these behavioral services. I am, however, building on Representative Backer's question. I mean, we've really pulled the teeth out of the enforcement of this. What if a supervisor fails to report on the supervisor, fails to submit a revised supervisor plan? It's stricken out. It used to be that if that didn't happen, that license would be revoked. Now that's not the case. So if a supervisor just chooses not to do it, does the provisional licensee, are they able to continue practice?
Representative, Ms. Troy Young.
I think it actually in our other disciplinary action, there's a lot more options for disciplinary action moving to E than actually just having it be revoked. And so I think that one of the things we'd like to do is say we like to have the same option for all the licensee types, and this provisional license has been in its own chapter, and the option was just to revoke, but then open it up to other disciplinary action that is available to the board to use. And so I understand your concern about just removing the revoke, but that is all. There's other, like I said, other disciplinary option that the board or its compliance team can take into consideration with it recodifying to E.
Thank you for that, Ms. Chang. Is it a follow-up?
Yeah, and I read that. But you're creating two tiers. You're creating a social worker that has passed the test, and you're that's one path, and you've created another path. So you've opened this up, not us. I'm really concerned with, creating these two tiers, and all of a sudden down the road we're going to end up with different scopes of practice. And I know that it's not in here today. But it's, again, I appreciate what we're doing, trying to make sure that we can get, more social workers with different backgrounds and different experiences to participate. We're lowering the 2,000 hours is still there. But we're lowering 37, we're going from, we're increasing supervision hours from 37 and a half to 50. So it seems like there's more focus on supervision, but yet there's no teeth in that supervisor. And I'll stop after this. It's just disparate to me in this thing, and I'm just worried how this is gonna work down the road. That's it.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. We are going to be moving this bill. We're going to be laying it over, so there will be time for more discussion on the points that members wish to discuss further. But any closing comments? Oh, wait, we have Representative Herr. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair Bierman. And I just wanted to say thank you, Chair Vang, for bringing this bill forward. I understand my GOP colleagues' concerns. I do see that measurements and putting in place of more supervision, more hours of training under another individual. I think that those are all really good steps. And I just want to say that as somebody who has failed miserably in every standardized test, I got a 21 on my ACTs, which colleges did not want to take a chance on me. I did poorly on my GMAT, and nobody wanted to accept me to grad school. And on provisional reasons, they've accepted me. I have failed my series license exam to do investments multiple times, and then on the third time I passed. And in every one of those cases, someone would say, you are not qualified to do this work. And yet in every profession I've been in, I've been a top employee, top producer, top everything, and I've moved in leadership because of that. And I really appreciate the fact that we are giving optional pathways to people who look like me, and for all intents and purposes, I should not be sitting in this chair. I should not be doing the work I'm doing now, but for the fact that there were provisional paths for me in every standard I test I've ever taken. And so I really appreciate that this bill is being brought forward and is giving greater opportunity. It is allowing more people to get into professions that they might otherwise quit. And if everyone is as persistent as I am, you will keep taking these tests at the cost, all costs to yourself and your family. And the truth is that shouldn't happen. And so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. And thank you, Representative Vang. And thank you for letting me make this comment, Chair Bierman.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Vang. Closing comments. Representative Hare, closing comments, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for their discussion. You know, the intent of this bill is really to expand eligibility for more providers to be able to get through the workforce. It's not our intent to say if a social worker passes the exam, they're more competent than someone who doesn't. There are other many tools to measure competence, and this bill is another tool for that. And so I also want to expressly thank Representative Jess Hansen, who's also a champion alongside with me on this bill too as well, and I want to thank her and the association's work and especially the board's work for championing this as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Joy, for being here. Thank you, Representative Vang, for your work on the bill. And with that, the bill, as amended, is laid over. Next up, we will go to House File 3741, Representative Edelson. Please take the chair, introduce yourself, and we will get started. The chair moves that House File 3741 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Edelson, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. This is early.
There is an author's amendment, and the chair moves the adoption of the A1 to put the bill in its intended form for discussion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Your bill is ready as amended. Rep. Edelson, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just to speak to the A1, we removed behavioral analyst assistance. We figured we would just start with behavioral analysts first and then go to the assistants later would be helpful. Okay, so the bill before you, 3741, establishes a licensing board, a certified behavioral analyst, or they're commonly known across the U.S. as BCBAs. They provide a form of behavioral therapy that is widely recognized across the U.S. and 37 states today. These professionals are known for helping patients modify or eliminate behaviors that are harmful, destructive, or self-endangering. Many of the techniques, I'm actually a clinical social worker, and many of the techniques are very similar to cognitive behavioral therapy that we practice in clinics around the state of Minnesota. So while most often associated with children who have been diagnosed with autism disorders, ABA is useful for applications of all types of age groups and populations. The bill creates a scope, a structure, a practice of behavioral analysis, accredited education programming requirements. I would like to note that St. Cloud University and University of Minnesota already offer education. Isn't that weird that we offer the education but we do not license it? A little bit of a gap there, but it also has the Board of Psychology reporting and doing the work here to license and regulate applied behavioral analyst. And we have the board represented here today, and they'll be able to speak to how this would work. It also creates a behavioral analyst advisory council. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will try to keep it short and go to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. We have some testifiers. If the first two could come forward. First is Brooke Anderson, and the second is Joel Bakken. And we have 2 minutes, and then the alarm will sound, so you'll need to wrap up at that point. Welcome to the committees. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brooke Anderson. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and a board certified behavior analyst, or BCBA. I'm the senior director of the Applied Behavior Analysis Program at Fraser. Fraser is the largest provider of children's mental health services in Minnesota. Our ABA program specifically We have a team of 27 behavior analysts and 11 mental health professionals who work together to supervise and support 430 direct service staff who provide intervention to individuals with autism and related conditions. We offer services in clinic and in the community for people of all ages, focus our support on building skills in a variety of areas important to the individual and caregiver. Some examples include self-care, social skills, learning and play, school readiness, and community engagement and inclusion. As a provider, and for myself, we make safety a top priority. We rely on professional licensing boards as one of elements of our safety and oversight protocols. Licensing boards play an important role in receiving and investigating reports of potential unethical or incompetent treatment practices. As an example, we've heard stories from autistic adults in our community who've reported unethical and harmful conduct as part of their treatment services, with no clear way to hold these providers responsible and accountable for their practices. We're committed to not repeating these mistakes, and passing this licensure bill is an important step toward protecting public safety. Our mental health professionals and nursing staff are licensed, and consequences are in place, including loss of licensure, for harmful or unethical treatment. Our neighboring states have all passed licensure laws for behavior analysts, and I urge us to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Next up, Joel Bakken, and then we'll have Jay O'Neill, and followed by Sam Sands. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. I am Joel Bakken. I'm a licensed psychologist in Minnesota and a licensed behavior analyst in North Dakota. For the past 25 years, I have been the executive director of Solutions Behavioral Healthcare Professionals, a nonprofit community mental health center serving greater Minnesota with offices in Moorhead, Detroit Lakes, Fergus Falls, Alexandria, and St. Cloud. We have a staff of 320, including psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, professional counselors, and behavior analysts. All of these professions are licensed except for behavior analysts. First, I want to remind everyone that 37 states across our nations have already enacted licensing for behavior analysts. All of our neighboring states already licensed behavior analysts too. This is particularly concerning for border communities such as Moorhead, since someone who encounters a licensing violation in North Dakota can simply move their practice across the river to Moorhead and avoid any repercussions. Moreover, without licensing, there's not a good pathway for the resolution of practice infractions without going through litigation. This can be expensive and lengthy, places undue burden on our citizens and legal system. Additionally, we cannot capture the metrics for the number and types of violations by behavior analysts. It is also crucial to recognize that behavior analysts typically serve our state's most vulnerable populations, including behaviorally disordered children, individuals with developmental disabilities, and children with autism. These individuals and their family rely on our services. It is our responsibility to ensure that these services are safe and ethical, and that our citizens receive the highest standard of care possible. In conclusion, passing a licensure process for behavior analysts in Minnesota is not just a matter of compliance, it's a matter of protecting the safety and security. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bakken. Next up, Mr. O'Neill.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jay O'Neill, and I am the owner and president of Behavioral Dimensions. Our agency provides a variety of in-home behavioral supports throughout Minnesota. We provide the early intervention services, crisis services to families in Dakota County, and we're recently proud to receive the Commissioner's Circle of Excellence Award for the work the crisis team is doing. We employ behavior analysts who provide behavioral supports to children, families, throughout many rural parts of the state. Behavior analysts are certified under the National Board and are required to follow the codes of ethics established by the board, but that certification is voluntary and the National Board has limited jurisdiction, especially after someone has been sanctioned. As an employer of 18 behavior analysts and another 10 pursuing certification, I support House File 3741 to provide a state governing board that licensed behavior analysts and is responsible for the oversight of the services being delivered to so many vulnerable people. The well-documented mental health crisis includes hospital, emergency rooms, and departments full of people who need behavioral support. Well-trained and monitored behavior analysts are a critical part of the team of professionals who help transition people from emergency departments back to the community. These individuals will continue to need ongoing behavioral support to prevent readmission to hospitals or more costly treatment centers. Our crisis team is seeing that if individuals are not provided this critical behavioral supports, they often return to emergency departments and in some unfortunate cases begin to enter the juvenile justice system, which is the last thing they need. Throughout my career, I have personally spent thousands of hours in families' homes interacting with parents and caregivers. I've seen that all families and individuals need to navigate to receive these critical services. The last thing they should need to do is worry about whether or not they're receiving services from a competent, qualified, and supervised professional. Agencies like ours are working with some of society's most vulnerable people, and all people need to have the local oversight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill, for coming before the committee. Next up, Mr. Sam Sands. Please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sam Sands. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Psychology. We're the board that's charged with administering the behavior analyst license under this bill. The board supports this legislation. As we've heard, behavior analysts, their clients are often vulnerable adults and children that have an impaired ability to protect themselves from maltreatment. Licensure is the appropriate level of regulation for this profession. As we've heard, 37 states are already licensing these individuals, including all of our neighbors. A review of the disciplinary statutes or disciplinary orders of other states that license individuals show that the potential harms could include financial exploitation of clients, physical exploitation of clients, boundaries violations, and also inadequate treatment records. These allegations are the same types that the board investigates with respect to psychologists. Licensure regulation would provide the state with the appropriate regulatory tools to protect the public. Behavior analysts aren't required to register with a certifying body, and a certifying body can't stop them from practicing in the state. This bill would allow the board to prevent bad actors from continuing to practice should that be necessary, and provide clients with additional remedies that they don't have under current law. The bill identifies current minimum competencies that behavior analysts must have in order to practice here, and those are mainly in line with what's required in the 37 other states that have licensing. It also creates an advisory committee for the board to use to update practice standards as they evolve. This would give the state the tools that it needs to ensure that only qualified providers are providing services. It establishes an efficient and effective system to adjudicate complaints and hold behavior analysts accountable for their conduct. Thank you for your time and allowing me to testify today. I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Mr. Sands. That's the end of testifiers. Anybody from the public wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. And first we have Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. The question I have is you know, we've not had a licensure before. Does this compete with something out there right now in the marketplace with another type of existing licensure in this industry? Is there something out there?
Representative Backer, is that for the testifier?
Whoever wants to answer it.
Okay. Representative Edelson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Backer. So right now, so University of Minnesota, St. Cloud, there might be other more than that, but they offer, it's a certification, that's a national certification. we want more people. This is actually, we do want more people to take this. This is a really helpful training, but we need more regulation. And so the licensure, it's not competing, honestly. Anybody we can get to go into any sort of mental health field or behavioral health field would be really helpful. It's not, I don't think it's negating or competing in the sense that it's going to take away from. It's adding to, and it's just making sure we're regulating it, just like social workers are regulated and psychologists. It's putting in protections for the public.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. A follow-up?
Another question, not a follow-up. Thank you. And I know, and I'm sorry, I did not get your name. Was talking about, it sounds like Mr. that the Board of Pharmacy supports this. The representative talked about regulations. what are some of the challenges, one or two, that you've seen over the years that this will help prevent from happening for our constituents and so forth?
Mr. Sands.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what I would say is in reviewing other states that have licensing, right? So you have, they've taken disciplinary actions against their behavior analysts that are licensed. So they have all the tools that we would be asking to have here under licensing regulation. In those states, you can see that there are financial exploitation of a behavior analyst of clients, sometimes physical exploitation, including some allegations and corroborated sexual contact, inadequate treatment records, inadequate safety of patient-client information, some of those that go to continuity of care, some of those go to actual client health and well-being. So those are the kinds of things that we would expect to see here in Minnesota because we see them in other states that have licensing. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Sands.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, sorry for that. Yeah, generality, that's what I was looking for because obviously if we're going to have a board, we want them, I mean, if we're going to license the individuals, we want to make sure there's a benefit instead of just added bureaucracy, okay? That's, and I'm not saying that's the intent of this, but, you know, there are well intentions, but at the end, if we're having people not getting the treatment, the behavioral treatment that they need, and you answered that question, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Becker. Final word, Representative Edelson.
Thank you. I just thanks the committee for their support, and, is there another, there's another question.
I didn't see him on there. Sorry, we have one more question from Mr. Nadeau, who will be quick, I know.
Well, I've got one really simple question, and then I'm going to talk about the exemptions. So the simple question is on 4.16. I'm really growing weary of boards mailing, renewal notices for licenses. I mean, everyone gets paid electronically. I mean, why in the world are we still putting mail, U.S. mail, in our license renewals? That's my simple question.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Noto. I'll tell you, as somebody has to renew my license, the mailing piece is just the mail to renew is actually just about accessibility. And so I don't think we should remove that option. That's, a different discussion in terms of all of renewals for all licensure boards. But I would just say we want to keep people licensed in a timely manner, and I don't know that removing that right now would be the best idea.
Representative Nadeau.
Yep, just quick follow-up. I mean, we don't mail checks when we pay for psychotherapy. It's all electronically. I mean, everything is electronic, and I just think it's going to save money over time, and hopefully someone will decide that we're going to change that in all of our licensure. I'm going to start on line 6.23. And this is in the exemptions to licensure requirement, and I'm concerned with 6.23 to 6.27. And I want to spend most of my time on 6.28 and 6.29 with 2.4D with 2.4D providers. So why are we exempting school district employees from this BCBA licensure? That's my first question.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sand would be a good one to answer this question.
So,
Mr. Sands.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so this is a compromise bill where we went and talked with all the stakeholders who would be providing, and one of our intents when we were looking at this is to make sure that there was a structure in place that would provide proper oversight for these professions, and therefore the board wouldn't have to be necessarily regulating those individuals. So some of that would be the school systems where those individuals are licensed through the PELSBY, the Board of Teaching. And so those individuals would be provided oversight in those settings. If those individuals wanted to practice outside of those settings, they could always get the license with the board, and then we would also be regulating those individuals. But we were very mindful about not eliminating pathways to services for families. And so that was one of the ways that we worked out that those individuals would be receiving some level of supervision and oversight.
Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am concerned with this. I mean, because now we're basically setting a licensure based on where someone is receiving services. If it's in a school setting, we're not as concerned as their safety as we would be in a clinical setting or in a community-based setting. And I get it. Maybe there was some language. I would argue that PELSBY is not quite the overseer as the Board of Psychology. These are the same CPT billing codes that are being used for the provision of those services. And I think that this is, I don't know why we had to compromise on this, but if licensure is an important component for health, safety, and welfare of these vulnerable populations, I think we should apply it across the board, wherever they're receiving that service. I'm going to follow up with line 6.28, 24D providers, why are they exempt from licensure?
Thank you,
Representative Edelson.
Mr. Chair, if we could circle back with Mr. Nadeau on that piece,
that would be just fine.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We can move on, and we will have some time on this. This will be laid over, so we can have plenty of ample time to answer the questions. So, final word, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the good discussion today. We will circle back with Mr. Nadeau, but overwhelmingly, this is a really important bill for the protections of Minnesotans, but also the growing of an industry and a field that is really needed in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And the testifiers, 3741 is amended. As amended, is laid over. Next up, House File 2466, Representative Curran, and we will proceed when you can introduce yourself and are ready. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Chair.
The chair also moves that the bill 2466 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. And there is a DE, so the chair will move the DE to put the bill in the form the author intends to discuss it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. To the bill, as amended, Rep. Curran.
Thank you so much, Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 2466 today. This bill gives authorization to pharmacists to prescribe, dispense, and administer medications that are used to prevent the acquisition of HIV. In 2024, we have HIV outbreaks in Minneapolis and Duluth. Numbers continue to rise statewide, and we have the medication to prevent this. Medication access is a primary solution to mitigate this spread. Just to note that one housing provider alone that provides supportive housing exclusively for low-income people and families who are HIV positive, majority of which are currently unsheltered, has a waiting list of 400 people. PEP and PrEP access is the most critical for lowest income Minnesotans who are more vulnerable to contracting the virus with the current barriers in place. And with that, I will turn it over to our first testifier.
Thank you, Representative Curran. First up, Dylan Boyer, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Dylan Boyer. I use he, him pronouns. I am the Director of Development at the Aliveness Project, which is a community and wellness center for people who live with HIV. I'm an out, proud, queer individual here in Minnesota, and I have been living with HIV myself for 8 years. Hearing the news that you are HIV positive can be very overwhelming, and nearly every day someone is newly diagnosed here in Minnesota, and over 40,000 new cases nationwide. if we had a vaccine to prevent HIV, we could see these cases significantly decreased, but we don't have a vaccine, and it is very uncertain if and when we will ever get a vaccine. Fortunately, we do have something else. It's called pre-exposure prophylaxis, commonly known as PrEP. When taken as prescribed, PrEP, a once-daily pill or injection, is more than 99% effective in preventing HIV. 10 years ago, I began my journey to try to start taking PrEP myself to prevent HIV. This was not a simple decision for me. I was still on my parents' insurance, and I had to have difficult conversations with my parents about HIV, sex, and it took me about 2 years to build up the courage to start PrEP. Because of stigma in clinical settings, difficulty finding queer competent providers, cost, navigating complicated healthcare systems, I continued to put off making that appointment. I was too late. It was at that PrEP appointment that I was diagnosed with HIV. Had access to PrEP been easily available at pharmacies, I would have started PrEP treatment sooner prior to my HIV exposure and ultimately prevented HIV. I believe that we can get to zero new cases of HIV in Minnesota. I want to thank Rep. Curran for doing this important work, and thank you, members of the committee, for your time. I hope you join us in ending HIV in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyer. And next up will be Jamie Swanson, please. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jamie Swanson. I'm an HIV specialty pharmacist. I work at the Walgreens in Uptown, where we currently serve over 1,500 patients that are either taking medications to treat or prevent HIV. Frequently, I've had patients call the pharmacy before even talking to their provider about different barriers that they have or concerns with PrEP. Things like, is it going to be tolerable? Is it going to be affordable? And where can I go to get PrEP? PrEP has been available for over 10 years now. We've significantly reduced the number of barriers, but one of them is accessibility. Only 1 in 5 patients who are at risk of acquiring HIV were prescribed it in 2020. Many patients that I've consulted with when they're starting PrEP say that they've been thinking about it for months, even years, before actually starting to take it. Think of all the times during that period that they've been exposed to HIV. If we want to meet the goal of reducing new HIV infections in Minnesota, we need to take a more proactive approach. We need to connect these patients to that medication to help bridge them to when they can get into a provider. This bill will put pharmacists in a position to quickly act on getting HIV preventative meds in patients' hands much quicker. Allowing pharmacists to prescribe PrEP and PEP would provide another patient access point to receive the pre and post exposure that they need. I urge you to please push this piece of legislation forward and help us end HIV in Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Swanson. Anyone else from the public wish to testify on this issue? Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Yes. All right. Thank you. My name is Emma Sherman. I'm a sexual health educator at an organization in South Minneapolis. I've been at my job for about a year now, and when I first started, I had an accidental needle stick, which, of course, my first worry was about contracting HIV. And we have talks, there's most of the talk regarding HIV prevention medication is surrounding PrEP. However, I want to make sure that you are aware of another medication called PEP. It stands for post-exposure prophylaxis. Just as PEP is taken before you are exposed, PEP is taken after. And the way that most people start on PEP is they have to go into an emergency room and spend several hours waiting to speak with a physician simply to be told, okay, good, I sent your medication over to a pharmacy, which is what happened with me. And my insurance had lapsed as I had just started my new job. And when I went to pick up my medication, I was told it was going to cost me $5,000 out of pocket. This was not something that I could readily afford, and PEP is a medication that must be started within 72 hours of exposure. This meant that I had less than 3 days to come up with $5,000 to pay for this medication, or I could spend the next month absolutely terrified and wondering when I would be able to get tested. Luckily, I was able to work with the hospital and get the medication through their pharmacy. However, I know that not everyone is as lucky and as privileged as I am. Many of the people I work with would also benefit from PEP as well as PrEP. I do HIV and STI testing as well at my job. And many of the people I speak with tell me that they have come in for a very similar situation. And they have never heard of PEP before. So I, of course, take that opportunity to educate them. But the thing I hear most often in those situations is, oh my gosh, I can't believe something like this exists. I wish I had known about it. And knowing is a big part of it. But being able to actually access medication is the other half. And allowing pharmacists to be able to prescribe these medications would make it much more accessible for many of the people that I serve to be able to get these.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Sherman. Appreciate that. Seeing no other members of the public, we'll move to member questions. First, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Chair Bierman. And thank you, Representative Kieran. This is an important thing. I've got some overall, just a couple of overall questions. I want to start with, under the ACA, this is going back a little bit, but my understanding is that PrEP is already available and mandated under most plans. Am I incorrect in that? I think it's a federal thing.
Representative Curran, do you have a comment on that? Or would you like to?
Yeah, I'll have a testifier come up.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Taburin, Executive Director of the Aliveness Project. And Representative Nadeau, that is basically correct that there's sort of new provisions under the Affordable Care Act that PrEP is required without cost sharing. That largely covers the clinical visit. Not all health insurance plans are covering PrEP in the same way. There's no standard at the moment.
Excuse me, could you repeat your name again?
Matt Taburin, T-O-B-U-R-E-N.
Taburin. Thank you, Mr. Taburin, for that answer. And Representative Nadeau, follow up?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for that. And I also know that the Ryan White Act is kind of, I mean, I know it phased out a number of years ago, but Congress continues to fund it, which is a massively important program for, especially for our public programs at the county. The one question I have in the bill, and I don't know whoever can answer this, is on line 2.5, it basically is calling that any drug approved by the FDA is to be covered under the language in this bill. Now, I don't know the total number, but I think the number is growing, and I think there might be a very big cost associated with those different drugs. And I want to say there's more than 30 that are currently FDA approved. Do we know, again, I think part of what we try to do here is balance the needs of the individual and the community along with the costs associated with that. And I'm just curious if you can give, with your experience, give us a little bit of testimony on the different drugs and if you know the different costs. I know that we're talking about PEP, PrEP, and PEP, and this one specifically, but this basically requires that all FDA-approved drugs would be mandated to be covered under our plans. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Representative Nadeau, I'm not sure that the testifier could list 30 possibilities here with costs, et cetera, so that might be a little something we'd have to follow up on after this hearing. This bill, again, will be laid over, unless you have a response to that. Mr. Taburin, in brief.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just differentiate medications to prevent HIV and the PrEP medications that we're talking about today are similar but not the same as the medications to treat HIV, and that those are different medications. And just to address that a little bit, in the language on the DE, it does it does not require prior auth or step therapy as long as a therapeutically equivalent version without prior authorization or step therapy is covered.
Thank you, Mr. Tabirin. Are you good, Mr. Representative Noe? Thank you for the questions. Seeing no other discussion, I will renew the motion. I guess I'll have a final word. Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much, committee, for the discussion today. I really appreciate being able to talk about this really important issue. I'll just say I hope that moving forward, if you have any questions, please do feel free to reach out since this bill will be laid over. But I really hope that we can see this pass this year and start to mitigate the spread of HIV in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Curran. Thank you, members, and thank you, testifiers. With that, this bill, HF 2466, as amended, is laid over. Next up, we are going to change the agenda a little bit and bring Representative Ryer forward for House File 3612. Please take your seat, introduce yourself. Rep. Ryer moves that House File 3612 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus, and we will go to you when you are ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I love bills like this one, House File 3612, because it cleans up a piece of legislation that creates unintentional barriers to access to care. What this bill does is removes a paragraph related to specialty dentists and allowing them to, instead of being a dentist who has a general dentist license, who also has a specialty that's been declared, the law says that they can no longer practice general dentistry. So this takes that paragraph out that was never the intent, so that someone who is a general dentist who also has a specialty can use their full range of skills. That's it. That's what it does. Happy to take any questions. Oh, also, I will add that the American Dental Association supports this bill, and it came to me through the Board of Dentistry.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. No testifiers on this one, as you mentioned. Anyone from the public wish to speak on the bill? Otherwise, we will go to any member questions. I do not see any. So with that, I will renew my motion, House File 3612, to be laid over. And thank you, Representative Ryer.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so now we will move to House File 4247. This is a Chair Liebling bill. In her absence, I will just introduce the bill on the Marriage and Family Therapy guest licensure established. Members, this is a bill to allow licensed therapists to have a time of residency in the state of Minnesota each year, each calendar year of 5 months. I'm going to just bring a testifier forward to continue to go over the bill, if you would want to come forward, and then we can address any questions of members. Mr. Sands, welcome to the committee again, and please proceed if you want to give an explainer. Chair Liebling is not here. I am the second author, so the chair will move House File 4247 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Mr. Sands, proceed. But introduce yourself again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I am Sam Sands. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Psychology. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Board of Marriage and Family Therapy, testifying on House File 4247, which creates guest license to practice marriage and family therapy in Minnesota for non-resident licensed marriage and family therapists. I'll refer to them as LMFTs. A guest license is intended to increase access to qualified, competent marriage and family therapy services for Minnesotans. by allowing those holding an LMFT license in another jurisdiction to provide MFT services for a limited period to clients physically located in our state. Individuals anticipated to receive services from a guest license may include students on summer or school breaks, people with dual residencies like snowbirds, people who have temporarily relocated to Minnesota for work or family commitments, and individuals who have permanently relocated to Minnesota for a transition from a prior LMFT to a Minnesota licensed marriage and family therapist. This guest licensing bill is brought forth by the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy as an additional tool to address an LMFT's ability to provide interjurisdictional therapy services and allow for continuity of care. It works in conjunction with the board's current process to seek Minnesota LMFT licensure by endorsement used by LMFTs in another jurisdiction who wish to obtain a permanent LMFT license in Minnesota. Guest licensure is an option that does not require an applicant to seek a permanent license in Minnesota. It's a more streamlined applicant process, although it still does require a fingerprint criminal background check that allows for practice in Minnesota for a period of no more than 5 consecutive months within a 12-month period. The license is non-renewable, but the applicant can apply for a guest license upon application of expiration of the prior license. LMFT seeking guest licensure must have an LMFT license in good standing in another jurisdiction and not be the subject of current complaints or any disciplinary or corrective orders. The bill is brought forward by the board as a straightforward, simplified method to allow limited practice in Minnesota by qualified licensed marriage and family therapists. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Sands. Anybody else from the public wish to speak on this bill? Seeing none, we will go to member questions and discussion. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair, and welcome. I have just a quick question, and that is, can you give me any examples of other boards that allow for guest licensure?
Mr. Sands.
Chair. Representative, yes. So the Minnesota Board of Psychology, the board that I'm the executive director for, also has a guest licensure that this bill is modeled after. In addition, the Minnesota Board of Social Work has a temporary practice. And then I believe that the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy also has some ability for out-of-state licensees to provide services into Minnesota.
Follow up, Representative Perryman.
With all those, thank you, Chair, and with all those examples, are you feeling good about attracting more licensures in using this new bill?
Mr.
Chair Beer, Representative Perryman, Representative, I think that this is a good gateway for people to provide services on a temporary basis into Minnesota, and then if that turns into something more long-term, then that is an option for those individuals to then, you know, apply for the full and permanent license in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And we'll go to Representative Nadeau.
I could have asked this on almost any, I kind of forgot on the last one, but I'm going to use it here. So when we're talking about guest licensure, can you talk a little bit about the professional liability coverage that does the guest licensure include professional liability coverage in order to get that license, or is that something that's beyond the scope of licensure?
Mr. Sands.
Chair Bierman, Representative Doe. So professional liability coverage is something that the individual licensee would get if they wanted to, and generally they do, but that's not something that's required under the guest licensing law in this bill or in any guest licensing law for these health licensing boards guest licenses.
Representative Nadeau, further question?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sands. I was just wondering how many guest licensures you expect. And do you anticipate that it'll meet the demand of, you know, what you're looking to accomplish with the bill?
Mr. Sands.
Chair Bierman, Representative. I don't have an answer for how many the board is expecting. It might be in the fiscal note. I'll have to get back to you on that. But what I will say is that I think it does increase access and increase the potential for people to provide services into Minnesota. And so any ways that we can kind of look at those tools and try and increase that ability to provide services into Minnesota is valuable.
I think Mr. Harney might have a comment on this as well.
Great, thank you. Chair Bierman, Representative Murphy, the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy estimates approximately 30 individuals will seek guest licensure under this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Harney.
Chair, just to
follow up.
Do you think the 30 will meet the demand? I mean, do you have any expectations of how many you think we should have?
Mr. Sands.
That is a question that I think I would ask the Executive Director of the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy to answer. So I'll have to get back to you on that one. So thank you.
So I just have one question, unless you have another follow-up.
Oh, good.
One question, Mr. Sands. So would you say the nature of this bill is to allow people who previously were working with an advisor or a counselor to continue that in the separation? Is that it's not really about all new, bringing new people back. It's continuing care.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is right. Mostly the bill is about continuity of care. So if somebody lives in Arizona and they move to Minnesota for the summer, that would allow the Arizona licensed marriage and family therapist to get this temporary license to provide that client services over the summer. Or say somebody is an Arizona resident that goes to the University of Minnesota to provide those services while they're attending school.
Thank you, Mr. Sands. One more question. We'll have Representative Becker.
Yeah, thank you. In regards with that, so you talked about that this is not set up to create new. So what amount, do we have an idea of how much this would be used? You know, so if we have a person, like you said, from Arizona that's coming to Minnesota, are we looking at 5, 10, 20 cases like this?
So
thank you.
Mr. Sands, we sort of heard from Mr. Harney about that, but proceed. So I think the number was about 30.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I missed that. Thank you.
Thank you, members, for the discussion on the bill. I will renew my motion for House File 4247 to be laid over, and appreciate your testimony, Mr. Sands. Thank you. All right, we have one more bill. Representative Bonner. House File 1197. Rep. Bonner moves that House File 1197 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. There is an author's amendment. Bonner moves adoption of the A5 to put the bill in the form. The author intends to discuss it. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. All right. To the bill as amended, Rep. Bonner, it is in the shape you prefer. And please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for indulging as well. Too many hearings, too little time, right? But Mr. Chair and members, House File 1197 has been worked on since 2022. It is a priority this year as some of the permissions granted to pharmacists and pharmacy technicians since 2020 that have been instrumental in delivering care during the pandemic are set to expire at the end of this year. The bill before you is simple and straightforward. It ensures that fully credentialed, trained pharmacists, supervised pharmacy technicians, and pharmacist interns who are an essential part of the care continuum may continue to perform basic immunizations and testing services in the pharmacy setting, as they have throughout the pandemic and are currently providing for Minnesota patients and families. With the addition of the amendments, the bill incorporates the changes adopted by the Senate HHS in late February, which includes a consensus position regarding the age at which vaccinations can be administered in a Minnesota pharmacy. It incorporates additional training requirements for pharmacy technicians and pharmacist interns and clarifies their supervision by a licensed pharmacist. And it maintains the positions of the current Minnesota pharmacy immunizations and CLIA-weighed non-lab tests provisions in the Practices Act, Minnesota 151.01, Subdivision 27. Overall, the bill continues the current practice of vaccinations for COVID and flu, as well as all ACIP recommendations and FDA-approved immunizations. Basic maintenance medications such as Vivitrol for treatment of alcohol or opioid use disorder, and they are, provide essential services like non-lab health testing and other medication managements, services for patients. While doctors and clinicians continue to make the case, they cannot do this work alone. With concerns we are falling behind overall on vaccinations, they continue to agree the service pharmacies provide are much appreciated to fill in the gaps. I'm here today to enlist your support for the continuation of an incredible story. For the during the pandemic, Minnesota pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, and pharmacy interns were able to vaccinate and test millions of Minnesotans. In 2020, federal authorities turned to pharmacists and pharmacy techs to get the job done, and they delivered. With most areas of the state within 5 miles of a pharmacy and in great and areas of greater Minnesota a bit further out, where access to these services is often your trusted local pharmacist, they delivered in a big way. This is why over 56% of Minnesotans currently receive their vaccinations in a pharmacy setting. With federal authority set to expire on December 31st of this year, we need to act to ensure that Minnesotans get access to the care they need by joining the 30 plus states that have already codified the ability of pharmacists and pharmacy techs to continue this important work. With that, members, I also have here a support in your packet, letters of support from the Minnesota APRN coalitions and MNNP, as well as examples from physicians and various supporters. I will add here today that unfortunately, Dr. Jonathan Ken Knight, the pediatrician at Essentia Health of Duluth, sends his regrets. He had hoped to be here in person, but we were not able to do electronic testimony for today. So my apologies there. But we do have two other wonderful testifiers to speak to the bill. And with that, I will turn it over.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. And first up is Professor Philbrick. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Philbrick, and I am a doctor of pharmacy and associate professor at the University of Minnesota College of Pharmacy and Medical School. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I've been a pharmacist for 18 years, and I've been in charge of immunization training at the College of Pharmacy for 14 years. I have trained and taught hundreds of pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, and pharmacy interns across Minnesota in both in-class content, in the pharmacy curriculum, and through separate American College of Pharmaceutical Education, or ACPE, accredited continuing education courses. Through my position at the University of Minnesota, I have seen the great work that our pharmacy workforce has been doing in community pharmacies, clinics, and health systems. Minnesota's highly trained pharmacy workforce is doing an amazing job with over 5 million vaccinations administered in a community pharmacy setting since 2020. Immunization delivery has been integrated into the PharmD curriculum since 2002, when pharmacists were first given authority to administer vaccines in Minnesota. Pharmacy interns or students receive approximately 20 hours on vaccine preventable diseases, their corresponding vaccines, and vaccine schedule. They get information on precautions, contraindications, and side effects of these vaccines. They are also trained in responding to vaccine-related emergencies such as fainting or anaphylactic reactions. They also have the opportunity to apply this knowledge through cases and make vaccine recommendations. Finally, and most importantly, they get hands-on experience with administering both intramuscular and subcutaneous vaccines at least 3 times in a laboratory setting, as well as have ample opportunities to apply this knowledge and skill on introductory and advanced pharmacy practice experiences. A corresponding ACPE accredited continuing education course is available for practicing pharmacists. In 2021, I developed a 5-credit ACPE accredited continuing education course for pharmacy technicians. As the HHS PREP Act and this proposed legislation makes it clear that pharmacists are the ones to make actual recommendations, this course does not focus on who should receive certain vaccines, but rather focuses on general information about these vaccines, including potential adverse effects to share with the patient, as well as storage and handling. The course also includes information on responding to vaccine and related emergencies. And finally, the course culminates in being able to correctly demonstrate both an intramuscular and subcutaneous vaccine. Hundreds of pharmacy technicians have taken this course to date. I urge you to pass this legislation so that Minnesota does not go backwards in the great progress that we've done in the past couple of years. Please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Philbrick. Next up, Mr. Jason Miller. Welcome. Please introduce yourself to the committee.
Good morning, Chair and committee. My name is Jason Miller. I'm a pharmacist with Coburn's and Cashwise Pharmacies. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Pharmacists Association and the Minnesota Pharmacy Alliance in support of this bill. This legislation, as stated previously, would authorize pharmacists, trained pharmacy technicians, and interns to continue the immunization and testing services they have been providing to patients across Minnesota since 2020. And as a reminder to highlight the urgency of this bill, the federal authorities that we're currently working under today will expire at the end of the year, and patients will then not be able to obtain certain services they have come to expect in our local community pharmacies. Stakeholders from across Minnesota's health systems, the Board of Pharmacy, and Department of Health have worked together and come to agreement on this amended language for House File 1197 to keep those authorities in place. It was almost 4 years ago now that the PREP authorities authorized pharmacy technicians that have completed training and have become certified to administer immunizations. Pharmacy technicians stepped up, as mentioned. They provided critical access to care to respond to this pandemic. This bill language specifies the training, credentialing, and supervision requirements necessary for them to participate and ensure the continued safe provision of patient care for Minnesota residents. And moving forward, speaking for all of pharmacy, we simply cannot continue to provide that elevated level of care without the authorization for pharmacy technicians to vaccinate. These provisions also include the pharmacist's ordering of immunizations and some CLIA wave tests independently. This will allow us to better support our current healthcare system that is stretched thin and struggling to meet the demands of an aging population. It also allows for pharmacy to continue to provide immunizations to patients at a slightly expanded age range. The compromise language in this bill allows for vaccinations for flu and COVID to ages 3 and up and 6 and up for all other vaccinations. And this will actually catch our state up to about 30 other states that have authorized pharmacy to vaccinate patients 6 years and up for ACIP recommended and FDA approved vaccinations. So on behalf of all Minnesota pharmacy, we ask you to please support House File 1197 as amended, so that my colleagues and I can continue to provide the services you and all Minnesotans need.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller, for your testimony. I don't see any other listed testifiers. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. And Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Can you, online, I'm curious, well, I have two questions. I'm going to start with this one. Starting at line 4.31, where we're basically saying that MA is going to cover this cost provided at the pharmacies, do we need special CMS authorization to do that, or is that already an approved repayment for our public health programs?
Representative Bonner will have a... Mr. Miller will come forward, or we have Mr. Hope coming down. Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the committee. Appreciate it.
Good morning. My name is Chad Hope. I'm the Director of Pharmacy at DHS. We do have to do state plan amendments when we add new coverage and services. These are already covered services. I do not know if we have to do a state plan amendment to add pharmacists as independent prescribers. They are currently acting in that role with the PREP Act authority. We may have to do a state plan amendment, but that would not be overly onerous to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Hope. Mr. Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. Just a quick follow-up on that, how long does that take? I know you said it's not onerous. How long does that take?
Mr. Hope.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the state plan amendment process really is variable. For something like this, I would not anticipate it would take very long. Generally, CMS will approve those sorts of updates. We're talking weeks to months, not years.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hope.
Thank you.
Good questions, Mr. Representative Nadeau. Do you have more?
I just have one more, just because I don't understand the difference between a technician and an intern. Can someone tell me the different scope of work or how that works?
Dr. Philbrook.
Chair, Representative, a pharmacy intern gets that status after 1 year being in the pharmacy program at any college, but at the University of Minnesota in Minnesota. A pharmacy technician has either done specific training, a certificate program, or they have done on-the-job training. So it just is a difference of being in a doctorate of pharmacy program versus kind of on-the-job training.
Thank you, Dr. Philbrook. Any further questions? I do not see any. We will go to final comments. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's a good bill. It allows folks across the state to continue to serve critical or take care of the critical needs of Minnesota families and patients. And we know from talking to clinicians, and I've talked to many, that they have said we are falling behind on our vaccinations for adults and children. And so any ability to access that continuum of care to really get the job done is much appreciated, and the clinicians have said so flat out. So we would really appreciate your help in making sure that they can continue to deliver those services. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Representative Bonner, for the bill. House File 1197, as amended, is laid over. And with that, committee, we are 7 minutes ahead of schedule adjourned.
Good job.